Thank you, everyone. And thanks for the speakers that kind of set a good stage for walls and politics. So I'm going to present some of the work that I've done in the past that looks at Palestinian health from the political kind of human rights lens, but also kind of provide some data on health indicators and how they indicate that Palestinian health, when you compare it to like Israeli health, it's an indicator of inequalities, not only between Palestinians and Israelis that live within the same geography, right? And we're in a APHA conference on health geography and health geography. But also that within the Palestinian population, because of the fragmentation, you're setting a stage where there are health health disparities within Palestine, or what we consider Palestine, occupied Palestine. And a lot of the information I present is based on publication that I published several years ago. And I think so, just to kind of get a historical perspective on what are we talking about, and we saw a few maps, pictures of walls, but historically, so the first map on the left has West Bank Gaza, and then you see Israel. So that was Palestine before 1948. After 1948, you had the West Bank and Gaza, various provinces. And then over time, Israel kind of annexed more land, had more control. And during the Oslo Accords, you had kind of codified Palestinian control of certain areas. So basically, Palestinians were really the Palestinian Authority, had control for in basically areas A, so what are those? And Palestinian villages, too, to a certain extent. And area C was really the Israeli settlements. And this is all the West Bank, right? This is Palestine. And this is what the Palestinian Authority is charged with or is responsible for ensuring Palestinian health. But this is occupied Palestine, right? It's fragmented. It's not coordinated. Even if they had the best health structure, if USAID gave them $10 billion, they can't move from one village to the next, right? So it's a political problem that requires a political solution. It doesn't require just interventions that maybe will have intermediate cure to the problem in a specific health center. Long term, the solution has to be solved at the political, policy, human rights level. So hopefully peace is the solution. And that's kind of the framework that I'm functioning, or the model that I kind of use to think about this problem. And going back to our earlier speakers, it's all about movement restrictions, really. I mean, one of the major problems that relates to policy and politics is movement restrictions. This is a map from the OCHA, which is the Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, that has the distribution of the clinics in the West Bank. And because this is a public health conference, because I'm interested in public health and access to healthcare, this is kind of a more relevant map. There's a lot of maps that you can access on the internet if you're interested in looking at the geography of Palestine. And it really illustrates, I think, clearly how access, because of the fragmentation, varies, is a problem, but it varies geographically. And relates to health. When you think about, we know access to healthcare is a major determinant of health, alongside social determinants, and policy and politics is a social determinant in the context of Palestinian health. This is particularly important when you think about prevention and emergency medical services that are critical in an occupied territory. There's war, there's violence, there's conflict. And you need preventative services. It's a right. It's not a privilege. When someone is caught in the crossfire, they need to be treated. But if emergency medical services or ambulances can't get from point A to point B, and this is, I mean, I focus a lot on the West Bank because that's where I do most of my work and that's where my interests are, and it's actually because I can't enter Gaza, actually. So I tried before, but I'm not allowed to because I'm Palestinian and I'm not allowed to go to Palestine, Gaza, Palestine. So that's the reason why I talk a lot about the West Bank, but it's actually worse in Gaza. But I just don't have kind of the first-hand knowledge, but many other people do. And you can read a lot about it in The Lancet, actually, which I think one of our speakers is going to talk about. So major problem, fragmentation related to Israeli policies that were also signed off on during the Oslo Accords many, many years ago. So it's a political problem. And so I guess 6 years ago now, in order to, because we're scientists, or we think we are, right? So I'm like, okay, there's this barrier being developed in the West Bank. I'm sure it's a problem, right? Like our speakers were saying, it's a disaster. So does it really impact access to healthcare? And that's one of the primary objectives of the study that I led and I worked on with Save the Children in the West Bank when in 2004, when the barrier was just kind of the first phase was completed. So we focused on the northern West Bank cities of Qalqilia, Tushkarim, and Jenin. And we did examine whether it did affect access to healthcare. And what we found was that it did, in terms of taking longer time to get to your health facilities or hospitals, less staffing at hospitals, but also people just being returned. But we also found that because Palestinians are used to these situations, they easily kind of try to cope, right? So if they have colleagues that work in this clinic and colleagues that work there, they kind of try to rotate. So you have this mobile health clinic movement that started in Palestine many years ago, but it expanded a lot since the barrier or the wall. So they're resilient, they know how to cope, and they are determined to overcome a lot of what they encounter in terms of Israeli occupation. So despite the finding that, yes, it does impact access to care in terms of travel time and distance and health services utilization, they have found ways at least to overcome some of kind of the barriers they can in terms of accessing primary care locally. If you look at just mortality, I mean, there's a lot of indicators if you compare them, especially now with a lot of the data that's available with the global burden of disease and even the DHS surveys, and they kind of segment them by refugee status, some of the surveys, and you can look at Israel, Palestine, West Bank, and Gaza, and you can differentiate. You see huge inequalities across the board, with Israel kind of having better health indicators than the West Bank oftentimes better than Gaza, and even within the West Bank, and if you look at refugee populations across the Middle East, within their host population. So if you compare, I do work in Jordan and the West Bank within the refugee population. If you just compare the refugee health within Jordan with the Jordanian health of the average, kind of using the surveys, because they do differentiate refugees from non-refugees, you see it's oftentimes worse. Even though they have the UNRWA health services, a public service mandated by the UN, and there are still disparities within those different populations that live within the same geography. But specifically in Palestine, if you just look at these basic population health indicators, there's a huge gap. And this can't be really explained by just people tend to die because they're Palestinian. It's because they're living in Palestine, and the determinants of health that lead to lower infant mortality rates or lower child mortality or maternal are not there, whether it's prenatal care, postnatal care, nutrition, or even just survival. Related to casualties and fatalities due to war, explain a lot of this, and you know, in addition to access to healthcare and access to treatments. And it's persistent. So this is data based in 2000, but if you just look at the current indicators, yes, Palestinian health is improving, which is great, but there's a huge gap that persists. So yes, we're doing better, thank God, but there's still disparities that shouldn't be there. And that's where kind of what we need to work on in terms of reducing the gap between Palestine. And even actually when you look at within Israel, you compare Arab Israelis, and I did that for a project, to Jewish Israelis or Israeli Jews, because they are differentiated in terms of rights, and there's policies that give them different accesses to different resources. You see a gap there too. So it's not about being only in Palestine, it's about being Palestinian. By origin, whether you're in Palestine or Israel. And that's a problem from a human rights and from a public health perspective. You know, so there's a lot of ways to kind of think about what are the public health implications of occupation, of war. Some are more obvious, like fatalities that are preventable, that are unnecessary and disproportionate. But there's also kind of chronic disease, preventing chronic conditions, preventing disabilities. So you see problems of cerebral palsy in the West Bank. You know, you just go there and you see it's a problem. It's often hidden, but it's a major problem. And you, as a kind of, I'm clinically trained, so as a clinician, you're like, why are these problems here? And you go to the hospital. We're like, okay, well, understand why these problems are here. You know, patients that would be eligible for a C-section in an Israeli hospital, they don't have the resources all the time to have, like, a surgery. So they deliver. They have all these. A lot of them are not genetic. They're obstetric, right? So, I mean, this is just an illustration how prolonged, protracted occupation, current policies affect outcomes that affect population health. And, you know, we could spend a whole year talking about this. But these are just, I think, some key points that make you thinking about, yes, they are important, and they do impact patients, they impact people, and they impact people that are living under occupation that should be protected by international humanitarian law. And it's, are the responsibility of the occupier, not a fragmented Palestinian authority that has very limited power. Which is often the conception that, oh, you're Palestinian, the Palestinian government is responsible for ensuring access to health care. They're not, I mean, yes, in a Palestinian state they would be, but there's no Palestinian state right now, at least not a politically stable, cohesive, coordinated Palestinian state. And, you know, it goes without saying mental health, disability, all these are problems that are directly related to occupation. I mean, some may be indirectly, it can happen anywhere, yes, but a lot are directly related to occupation in terms of depression, PTSD. And, you know, again, this is particularly a problem not only in the West Bank, but mainly in Gaza. You see a lot of these problems amplified in situations of acute conflict, prolonged acute conflict, so kind of repeated conflicts where, you know, people, populations, groups of families are exposed to death and just, you know, horrific situations. Another area I think that's often, it's not really ignored, obviously we heard two speakers about environmental health. There are some, I think, problems related to environmental health that have not been given at least the public health attention that they should in terms of water. And a lot of it has to do with kind of the infrastructure, which has to do with the development, whether it's water and sanitation, like in Gaza. During a war, you know, you don't have water. Can you imagine? Or you don't have electricity. Like, we get used to it, but it's a major public health problem. It's not, you know, you don't have water for like a minute. You're like, what's going on, right? If you open your faucet, imagine you don't have water. And it's funny, I had a family friend come, and I know this is anecdotal, but she came to visit us in Chicago, and she assumed there would be no water. So she's like opening, oh, wow. She's so excited there's water. And I'm like, why are you playing with the, you know, faucet? It's just kind of these things that happen that illustrate that these small or seemingly small problems are not small. They're pretty huge when it comes to public health impact, especially in children. And I think this is kind of the last slide I want to show to kind of highlight the most recent conflict, at least in Gaza, and how it was so disproportionate. And clearly, like, if you look at the global burden of disease, I don't know if you're Seattle folks, right? They have Gaza and Palestine, West Bank differentiated. And if you look at times where there's war, there's like a spike. I forgot what they call it when there's a war. It shows you that the impact of these wars and these conflicts on Palestinian health, not Israeli health, Palestinian health are so dramatic that impact population health indicators, particularly a mortality, right? So it's not marginal over time. Wars affect health, and when they're unfair and unjust, they affect peace. And that's something we have to work on. Thank you. So I think in conclusion, and I probably concluded multiple times, is that these policies, occupation in particular, and the policies it imposes, and the freedoms it limits of both the Palestinian people and the Palestinian government, not only fragment the healthcare system, but degrade health and survival. So consequently, you see disparities within the population, so those who have money to leave perhaps could have access to care, but those that are within their communities, that only could access healthcare within their communities, which are the majority of the Palestinians, You know, they are and often, I mean, there's a lot of stories that you can read, you can hear. People return from kidney dialysis. You know, mothers having kids in a cab. I mean, these are kind of regular scenarios that happen that illustrate that it's a problem that affects all kind of age groups and demographics. Thank you.